Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. Jessica Stevens here, your host of I Just Blank Now What. Thank you so much for joining us for another Now What Wednesday and wonderful episode with an amazing story to share with all of you. I'm truly grateful for each and every single one of our listeners who come back week after week to listen. And if you are new to the podcast, big welcome. Thank you so much. I hope you found us through a family member or a friend who shared an episode with you, and you were truly inspired by the words that you heard. Today will be no different. We have an amazing story with my wonderful guest, Farah, and she is going to be talking about tragedy. You know, tragedy is something that hits all of us at different times in our lives and shows up in different packages and can be, you know, a little T tragedy or sometimes a big T tragedy. And Farah is someone who has experienced, you know, several over her lifetime for sure. So without further ado, we're going to get to this story. So here's a little bit about Farah. Farah is of Parsi origin and was born in London and raised in India. She is a British national with an Indian heart and embraces the different facets of her identity with ease. After the untimely loss of her mother, struggling to reconcile the mysteries of life and death, Farah embarked on a journey inward to find a conduit to channel her loss and pain. That's when she started writing her memoir, Mahar and Me, many years ago, and now adds published author to her many titles. Farah has built a career in the banking industry across continents over the span of 30 plus years and now is based in Dubai. She is the mom of two grown kids, and in her spare time, Farah is an avid baker and a yogi. So without further ado, let's get to the now what.
Have you ever had a situation happen in your life that you weren't expecting, good or bad, and said to yourself or out loud, oh my gosh, I just fill in the blank, now what? Me too, friend, me too. I've had quite a few actually, and in the moment, I never knew what I was gonna do next. Of course, I had to figure it out. Sometimes the hard way, but I did figure it out. So join me and some amazing guests this season as we all share our own I just blank now what stories so we can all learn from their transformational lessons to help us all answer that lifelong and often paralyzing question, now what?
Hey friends, have you ever had that I just feel so bloated, now what moment? Me too, and that's when I reach for my Greens Gut Glow Drink. Yep, I can sip my way to healthier looking skin, support my digestive system, and get an extra scoop of greens all in one bundle that helps me de-bloat. This nutritious trinity includes three of my favorite Arbonne nutrition products, Be Well Superfood Greens, Gut Health, Digestion, and Microbiome Support, and Skin Elixir Collagen Support. I drink this every day. The greens, just one scoop of this versatile vegan superfood powder, delivers a blend of 36 fruits and vegetables in each serving for a boost of greens, featuring fiber, phytonutrients, along with a natural deep green color courtesy of blue-green algae derived from spirulina, chlorella, wheatgrass, and barley grass. Just one scoop provides me with the benefits of eating a full color spectrum of fruits and vegetables. Minding my gut's microbiome is a must, and this delicate balance of bacteria helps support favorable gut flora. Designed to support the benefits of a healthy diet, this plant-powered natural health product mixes easily with water, so its blend of probiotics and enzymes can work synergistically with my body to help support gastrointestinal health. Its ingredients include inulin from chicory root and 3 billion CFUs of Bacillus coagulant probiotics, plus enzymes that act as a digestive aid. This natural health product helps support favorable gut flora while helping to digest proteins and contains ginger, which is traditionally used in herbal medicine to help relieve digestive upset. For the glow, I'm sipping my way to healthier looking skin. This acai or dragon fruit flavored vegan natural health product features antioxidant vitamin C to help in collagen formation to maximize healthy bones, cartilage, teeth, and gums, silicone, and biotin to support healthy hair, skin, and nails, and a blend of sea buckthorn fruit extract, pine bark extract, and vitamin C for antioxidants, this vegan natural health product provides beneficial ingredients for my skin, hair, and nails. So head to jessicastevenstoronto.arbonne.com and use promo code ARBONNE10 to get 10% off your Greens Gut Glow bundle. That's jessicastevenstoronto.arbonne.com and promo code ARBONNE10 gets you 10% off. Or just click the link in the show notes and get your Greens Gut Glow bundle all in one click.
Hello, Farah.
Hey, Jessica. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining me all the way across the world in Dubai.
You're very welcome.
I love the fact that our show has crossed so many international borders and is being reached and listened to and experienced by people across the world. And I'm just so grateful to have guests who represent those different regions as well. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And, you know, as we say grateful and thankful, it's Canadian Thanksgiving Day. So I think it's very opportune to give thanks for me being able to meet you across the wires and hopefully reach your listeners as well.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much. Okay. So here is something that I like to ask all of my guests before we jump into your story. Obviously, I just read your wonderful bio and you have many accomplishments and titles to your name. But what is it that you would actually want listeners to know about you? One thing that you're like, this is Farah.
Wow. One thing. Okay. That's kind of like summing it all up. I think I'd like to say I'm the sum of my parts. I'm no one thing, you know, I'm not, you know, where I was born or I'm not where I grew up or I'm not what my profession is or what I love to do in my spare time. The sum of my parts. And we all are. I think we all have these facets of our personalities that make up the person that we are talking to each other, you know. So it's sort of about don't judge a book by its cover. You know, if you meet me in the banking world, you know, you may not know that I love yoga or love baking or there's an artistic side to me. If you meet me on the mat, you may not know that, you know, I'm in the day, you know, the daytime I'm in a corporate job. So I think it's, we're all a sum of our parts.
I do love that. And someone whom also is, comes from multiple cultures, lives in a different country from our origins. We weave all of that. And that is definitely the experience that immigrants experience or people who are biracial or were raised in different, like, you know, different cultures. And yeah, it's true. We are everything and nothing all at the same time, right?
It's like when you have to do those online forms and they ask you to categorize your nationality or your origin. Yes. I always choose other because I'm like, I don't fit the box and I don't fit the sort of categories that you've pre-selected for me. So I'm always other. And I just think it makes for a richer experience. We are, you know, richer for all the experiences we've had in our lives.
Same. I love it. Okay. Thank you so much for that. That was a beautiful way to start our conversation today. And part of, you know, who we all are is our history, our path, our experiences, and often tragedy plays a part in who we become. And I know that you are not unfamiliar with tragedy, and that's what we're going to be unpacking today. So I'm going to, you know, hand it over to you and let you share this story of how you moved through tragedy in your life.
Thank you for that invitation. So I think the book talks of, say, the biggest tragedy I feel most people will experience, which is the loss of a parent. For me, the parent is the foundation. And I grew up in a single parent home. So starting with tragedy, you know, my parents separated and subsequently divorced, and my father was an absentee parent. So mom brought me up pretty much on her own. So from a point of view of tragedy, that abandonment is the first sort of one that a child reels from and then finds where they belong. Displacement, not so much a tragedy, but just a life experience. You know, I was four when I was taken from London to India. And those days, there wasn't this sort of very emotional style of parenting where you actually sit and talk to the children. It was just like, we ended up living there 14 years and they forgot to let me know that we're not going back to London. And I had to find my way of being in a country where I didn't speak the language when I first arrived. So there was a lot of settling in to do there. Subsequently, as a young adult, you know, the trials and tribulations of establishing yourself. I wanted to be a doctor. I ended up in banking. You know, it's the universe redirecting me, I guess. And then as life takes you through, I got divorced and made redundant in the same week. You know, the papers for the divorce were filed in the same week I got made redundant. Not great timing on the universe's part, I would say. And, you know, back to my mom and the loss of my mom, which, you know, it's one of those things that I don't think you ever truly get over. You just learn to be with that loss because nothing can ever replace that role that that individual plays. So you find a way to be without that presence in your life and just hope that she's watching from above. And, you know, I have very long conversations with her in the car when things aren't going so well. So I'm sure she's listening. But yeah, it's, I think all of us will experience some kind of tragedy, right? Whether it's health related or financial or relationship or, you know, the loss of someone close to you in any which way or form. And none of us are exempt from it at all. And it's just a way of knowing it'll come, but what can you do to find a way to find your strength in those moments? And what is that tragedy teaching you? Like, if I go back and stop and think, what did I learn from that experience? If that had not happened, might I have learned, you know, to take my car for the service? Things like that. So there, you can always sort of wallow in the tragedy and become a little bit bittered or, you know, just jaded by it, or you can choose to learn from it and hopefully pass on whatever you've learned to someone else who might be experiencing something and hopefully help them along their way.
Yeah, that's beautiful and so relevant to everyone. So I suppose what makes, you know, the loss of your mother a little different than, you know, the average, you know, adult child who, you know, who we're all going to lose our parents at some point to aging and they're ready to pass on. But your mom's death was unexpected and in a tragic way. Do you want to share a little bit about how that, you know, how the circumstances of her death impacted you as well? Because it's not like, you know, she was ill, you knew it was coming, you were prepared for this. This was very out of the blue and really unexpected.
Yeah, you're right. So my mother lived in Lucknow, our hometown where I'd grown up, and I was in Dubai at the time. And she had gone out late one evening to pick up my sister-in-law, and she interrupted four youths who were misbehaving and wanted them to do better, to apologize to the young, you know, the young lady they were harassing in a way. What she didn't know was they were, you know, either high from, you know, alcohol or substances, and they were petty criminals. And three of them apologized, the fourth one wouldn't. And when my mother insisted and sort of said she would call the police, they ran off. But then the fourth one, who didn't apologize, turned around, came back, took out a gun and shot my mother at very close range. So it's the whole crime. It's the wrong place, wrong time. It's like, why her? Why didn't she just stay in the car? Why did she get out to confront these people at night? You know, it's all this sense of so many questions of why and how and why us. And, you know, just timing, if she had gone 5 minutes earlier, 10 minutes later, she might not have encountered it. So many changes in that sequence of that evening's events that you think could have avoided the situation. But, you know, it happened. And she was at the wrong place, the wrong time, and we lost her. She survived the gunshot wounds for 25 days and then passed from her internal bleeding. And she was coherent for most of it and said, if the same thing happened again, I would do the same, you know, take the same steps and the same actions. And that was her spirit. She was a fighter. She confronted, you know, if she felt there was unfair actions or anything that was unjust, she would confront it and take it on without any sense of worry for her personal safety. And I think, you know, that spirit of standing up for the underdog or whoever is being treated unfairly is something that's great, but it cost her dearly and cost all of us.
Oh, wow. Well, first off, I want to just acknowledge you for the strength that you have in even just repeating and sharing the story. I'm sure the memories are of what happened and reliving them are maybe get a little bit easier with time, but still feel very fresh in the moment at the same time.
They do. But they also say that when you heal, you tell the story different. And now, as I narrate it, the emotional charge I can, you know, keep at bay because it's paying homage to her legacy. It's honoring her. And hopefully by sharing her story, it touches other people. They realize that they're not alone if they encounter something as horrific as this, which I hope no one ever does. But these sort of bad things happen to good people all the time. And I kind of think it's about knowing that you're not alone. When you're going through something, there's someone else who's, you know, been through a different kind of tragedy, perhaps. But I think grief is not unknown to any of us.
No, it is. It definitely is not. So take us back to, you know, thankfully she survived for 25 days. Were you able to go to her? Were you able to see her? Be able to have those final moments and words? Share a little bit about that, because I'm sure that definitely helped you in your healing and being able to say goodbye.
So mom was airlifted from Lucknow and taken to Delhi, which is the capital of India, where the medical facilities are better. So I flew from Dubai straight to Delhi to meet her. And she was in ICU. So, you know, the visiting times were restricted and, you know, timed by the hospital staff. But we were there, you know, friends, family, press, reporters, everyone was there 24/7. And it was, in India, they believe that there is great blessings to be able to serve your parents because your parents look after you growing up. You know, they teach you how to walk and eat and, you know, send you to school and teach you. And they say there's great blessings for the child who can serve their parents as they get older. But this was not the blessing that one imagines when you're looking after your parent in the hospital, right? But our conversations, she was fully aware of what was going on. She's very, very spiritual. So every morning she would say her prayers. There were pictures of the gods that she would follow. She would ask me to touch them to her forehead. There was coffee being ordered and mom was on a ventilator, so she couldn't speak, but she was mouthing and gesticulating. And she was very particular about how coffee was made. You know, you pour the hot water over the coffee, you don't add the milk first, you add the milk later, you strain it so there's no cream that sometimes comes to the top. And all of this, and it was almost as if, not almost as if, I actually did genuinely believe my mother, who was so strong, would get over this. She would come out. Yes, there would be some sort of physical impact, but we would bring her out. You know, there would be physio, whatever, to get her back on her feet, but she would survive.
She would recover.
Especially, yeah, in the early days, I truly did believe that, but that wasn't meant to be.
So when she finally did pass, what were you feeling? Like, you know, was there anger? Was there resentment? Was, you know, I know you said you started asking all the questions, like, why her? Why that night? Why did she, like, what were you truly feeling in the moment of this tragedy?
I think so. Towards the last couple of days, just before the bleeding started, mom was still fully conscious. And when the bleeding started, she said to me, "Baby, this is the end." And I welled up at that time. And I remember the doctor saying to me, "You're not allowed to show emotion in front of the patient because of impacting them emotionally." But it's very hard not to, you know, to control that particular emotion. And for 2 days we battled. It was sort of between the BP going up and she was diabetic and the medication and then the heart rate and, you know, every machine she was strapped up to. And then when she passed, it was almost a release for her because she was in so much physical discomfort and in pain that it was a release for her. And I don't even know if I have the words to say how I was feeling, but it's like you're robbed. There's that loss. It's like this emptiness. And they say when you lose a loved one, the eyes search the horizon for the soul or a glimpse of that loved one. And it's you're walking amongst people, but your eyes are at the horizon because you're waiting for a glimpse of her. So it's a very out of body kind of experience. I feel you're there, but your mind and your heart is elsewhere.
Gotcha. Okay. And you know, I unfortunately have not lost many loved ones in my time. And if it was from that beautiful time of lived a long life. I'm very grateful that I'm somebody who all my grandparents lived to well into their 80s and 90s. And so, you know, letting them was a blessing. And so I always just admire people who have lost people at younger ages and stages of their life, or their time has been, you know, snuffed out too soon, as we like to say, and cut short of functioning in life and going on and seeing hope. So what was your process? Like, obviously tragic experience, horrible grief, you know, how did you find your way back? How did you start navigating that question that you were having between the life and the death?
So when I first came back to the body, in India, we believe the soul transitions, right? It takes a period of time, then the soul leaves the body and transitions up to the higher realms. And you should allow the soul its journey. But there I was wanting to know that mom was okay. So I think I went to every psychic and tarot card reader I could locate in the vicinity to say, is she okay? Which is kind of contrary to letting the soul carry on peacefully. But it was this need to know that she had passed peacefully, given the sort of violent part of her ending. Therapy, you know, I was coping, going through my days, and my friend said, Farah, you definitely need, you know, to go to a therapist just for grief counseling, because I didn't know how to process the feelings or the emotions or talk about it or let the feelings, you know, the grief come through. So I went for grief counseling, and that was helpful. There was a lot of journaling and talking about, you know, what I was feeling, also visualizing letting go of mom and not trying to cling on to, you know, the loss of her, so to speak, and let the memories of her not be the ending, but, you know, other parts of her. Yoga became a very, very big sort of strong practice, which to this day is a practice for me. It's moving meditation for me. So, you know, at work, you're busy with the kids who were younger, I was busy. But the minute I sat down, the tears would start flowing, because that's when the grief would come rushing in. And I found if I took myself to a yoga class, it's my body's moving, but it's also allowing the emotions to move through it. And as my body got stronger with the practice, my mind also, I managed to get a rein on it a little bit, so it wouldn't, you know, gallop off into these sort of dark thoughts. And then baking. Mum had been a huge foodie. So had my grandmum. It's sort of in our family. Parsi is unknown for their love of food. And I had started baking after the birth of my daughter. And at one point, I'd even considered opening a cafe. And that's a whole different story. But then I would come home from work and I would go into the kitchen, not because I wanted to eat anything, but I just wanted to create. And I think working with my hands, people say the nerve endings in your hands, it helps with whatever you're feeling and to process it. And I would just bake, and, you know, friends, family, my colleagues, everyone would benefit from whatever was baked. And it would just share the joy. And, you know, when you smell, as you've got focaccia in the oven today, you know, that smell of bread baking or cake baking or biscuit. Mm-hmm. Like, I've made maple and pecan biscuits today for Canadian Thanksgiving. And the smell just arises and it lifts your spirits a little bit. And then someone eats it and gives them joy and they smile or compliment or, you know, thank you. And it was a way to find a little bit of happiness in what was a very sort of dark period otherwise. Yoga and baking were my two go-tos at the time. A lot of reading. I read every book on life, afterlife, death, spirituality, what happens to the soul when we pass away. So there was just all these resources to just try and figure out, you know, we come into this life. And as you say, if you live a full life, you go, they lived a full life, they had a great life, you know, it's time kind of thing. But this was so untimely, so unnecessary, and just so violent in its ending that you just think, how can that even be? You know, why would that even be? So yeah, there was a lot to process, and it's not an overnight thing, and it's not an overnight fix. It took quite a few years. And as part of the process and through the journaling, the writing started and the words just sort of came and I wrote them. And then I didn't know if I had a story to share or if I even had a voice. You know, did I have something to say? Did I write, you know, decently enough to want to publish it? So I shared that with a few trusted friends and they sort of were encouraging and asked me to carry on writing. So I wrote and it became the story. And the book that I now share with you and your listeners.
So it all started with your journal entries of you just therapeutically writing. But is that when you just looked back and said, oh, I think there's a story in here? Or did you say, okay, writing has been so therapeutic for me, I want to now actually write this story?
I don't even know if it was that conscious that I want to write. So it was the journal entries just helped me sort of keep track of what had happened and the events and how I was feeling in my emotional journey at the time. But it was almost, I just sat down and the words came and I just kept typing. And before I knew it, there were quite a few words. So it wasn't very conscious that I wanted to write a book. It was almost a chapter. And then I was like, okay, where does this go? What do I do with this? So, and then the story started building and the words just kept coming. So I kept building and then it became something that could be published potentially. And then that was a journey, you know, how do we publish it? Went out to publishers and, you know, agents and got lots of rejections. And it was another one bites the dust, press delete. I found the conduit and the way to bring it to you now. But yeah, it's been a bit of a journey.
Journey, absolutely. And a beautiful one. And it's such a great way to honor the life of your mother.
I hope so. I really hope so. That is the intention. She lived this very large, unconventional, you know, life, was this huge personality. And I think her legacy deserves to be told and honored.
So how long did it take you to write the book?
I'll say probably a year, like just to get all the words together. And then there was the editing, the revisions, working with people, again, you know, in different parts of the world, you know, fact-checking with my maternal uncle. So a lot of work going into it, then assembling the photographs, then figuring out, you know, do I want to include recipes or not, and the format of it and the formatting of the book. So that took a long while. That wasn't as easy. But the words itself, I think within a year, I had the substance of the book.
Oh, that's great. Do you think, you know, I have my perspective and my POV, but do you think that the process of writing the book and making the decision to put it out in the world to honor her and publish it was helpful in your journey of dealing with her death and her grief?
I definitely think so. You know, there'd be chapters I would write, and when I was reading them as part of the revision or the editing, you know, the tissue box was right there. So a lot of grief flowed through the writing process. And I think now as I tell the story, you know, like it's getting easier to be able to remember her without just the end. You know, it's my mom's full life. It's not just how she passed. It's the personality, the whole individual, and the sum of all her parts, to bring it back to that.
How old were your kids when your mother passed away?
6 and 4.
So quite they were young. Very young.
Yeah, but they knew my mom and have memories of her, which is lovely.
I'm assuming that in writing of the book and her life story was also a way for you to capture all the things that you wanted them to know about her too.
Absolutely. And it's something that they can keep and, you know, remember her by and get to know her by, because they were robbed of the chance to spend their sort of youth with her.
Question, just, you know, I've had conversations with, you know, lots of parents with young kids whom, when tragic things happen in life, they decide how much they share and how much, you know, they don't with the kids. You know, what was your decision when they were 4 and 6 of sharing how much about what happened to your mother? Did you actually divulge, or did you wait till they were a little older?
So I think, like, they were informed that my mother had passed. The manner of her passing I kept till they were older. Because I felt that, like, they didn't need to know that at that age. It was my feeling. They just knew. They called her Nanna. Nanna had passed on, was the messaging.
And when did you actually share, you know, the full story with how she passed with them?
They were older. Like, I can't remember how old, but definitely older, with access to the internet and Google and, you know, all the search engines. So, you know, self-service would have given them all the information, even if I hadn't. So it was time to tell them at that point.
How was that for them? What was their reaction to the news when you finally told them years later?
I think it was just incredulity, you know, like, again, do these sort of things still happen? How do these sort of things, how are they allowed to happen? And why would something like this happen, you know, to Nanna, mm-hmm. kind of thing? And just also it's reliving of that moment and absorbing the sense of the tragedy that's within the family that they had possibly been, you know, sheltered from for a period of time. But now you absorb the full ramifications and the full understanding of what happened and how it impacts the family. You know, every family is impacted by tragedy and the dynamics that play out after that.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for sharing all of this with us today. I'm so excited to read the book. It sounds wonderful, and I can't wait to learn more about your beautiful mother. A couple of final little things. So what's the one thing that you want people to take away after they read the book?
I think hope more than anything. Like, bad things will happen to all of us, but we'll find, or you will find, we all find the strength to deal with it and move through it. Find the tools that support you in your journey and you'll make it through, and trust the process.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And for anyone else out there who's listening right now and is experiencing something similar, you know, a tragic event has incurred in their sphere of life, what few tips do you share to help them move through the tragedy?
I'd say find your tribe, like find the trusted people, because some days you just want to be in your pajamas and sit under the duvet and you don't want to get out of bed, and you want to be with those people that you feel safe to do that with, and, you know, to be able to show your grief and your emotions. So definitely find your tribe, keep them close. Find some professional help as well. You know, counseling helped me, it may help them. I would encourage some sort of activity, like an active exercise. You know, I like yoga, they might like the gym, swimming, walking, hiking, whatever floats their boat. I would definitely bring in some sort of just movement, just moving your body. So the grief kind of moves and the emotions move through your body. And anything that sparks joy, find something that sparks a little joy. It was baking for me. It might be art. It might be gardening. It might be, you know, embroidery, painting, whatever makes them happy. Don't give up on those things.
Good advice. Not only for those experiencing tragedy, but all of us living every single day, right? You know, keep moving. Find the joy and be grateful for the life that you have. I think it's always the message that we all want to share. So Farah, where can people find you? Where can they find the book?
So the book, they can get online retailers, Amazon, Ingram, any retailer of their choice. We have a website, farahpress.com. They can come and see some of the pictures and look at the world I talk of and experience that kind of landscape. I'm on Instagram, farah.press, so they can come and maybe join the journey and see what's happening and keep up to date with us. I would love to hear their feedback and comments once they've read the book.
Wonderful. Okay. Listeners, wasn't today a beautiful story, even though it was born out of tragedy? If you resonated with this episode, please give it a like, a share, and don't forget to leave a review. Or if you know someone who is experiencing something similar, please, please, please share this episode with them, because it may just help them figure out their very own now what. Farah, thank you so much for joining me today, all the way from Dubai. I appreciate you so much. And listeners, we will be back next week for another Now What Wednesday. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate it more than I can say. Did you love this episode of I Just Blank, Now What? If you did, be sure to subscribe on your fave podcast platform. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. I do love reading them. And if you know somebody who's experiencing this story or something similar, please share this episode with them. It just might help them figure out the answers to their own now what questions. Have you recently had a now what moment and aren't sure what to do? Reach out to me at jessicastevens.ca and submit your story, and I'll help you figure out what to do, how to move forward, and help you answer now what. See you on the next episode.